Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers Podcast. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Hopefully you're having a good holiday weekend. The Milwaukee Brewers sure are. I mean, they head into the week having swept the Washington Nationals. They win 5 of 7 against the Padres and Nationals, 4 games at home against San Diego. Again, one of the best teams in baseball. And the Brewers found a way to split that series 2-2. Cut a couple tight extra inning games. Honestly, both of them could have gone either way. But the split then is probably right, and the Brewers go into a new week with the Tigers coming into town on Memorial Day on a high note. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Todd, I mean, I'll just start right at the top with what we saw on Sunday from Brandon Woodruff. He outduels Max Scherzer in Washington to complete the sweep of the Nationals. That's the second win of the week for Woodruff. We're running out of things to say about him, but I think the word that can come up now maybe is Sabathia. Like, this is a Sabathia run that he is on. Andrew Grumman had a great stat, one of the Brewers media relations guys, that he's the 8th pitcher in Brewers history to record 10 straight quality starts, and the first in Sabathia when he had 13 in that ridiculous run in 2008. I mean, this is something special. I think if the Brewers stay in the playoff hunt, this is your Cy Young. Like, at this point, third of the way through the season, I'm starting to feel like it's not going to get worse for Brandon Woodruff.
Well, before we start in on Brandon Woodruff, I would like to give a hat tip to Mr. Haudricourt for bravely manning the rainout on Saturday. The doubleheader, yes. I should say. The rainout on Friday, doubleheader on Saturday, and then a quick turnaround on Sunday. I've done my share of those over the years, including one I remember in the dead of August at Wrigley Field with no air conditioning. So that makes for really long days, and they're not fun. And then, you throw in wearing a mask and everything. I'm not saying I'm anti-mask. I'm just saying it's just a little bit more uncomfortable too. So all things considered, Tom braved a tough weekend, but on the bright side, he at least got some good stuff to write about, including Brandon Woodruff. He's been phenomenal, and it's really been something to watch. Kind of on a personal level, I think it's cool when really good guys are rewarded for playing well and for their efforts. And Brandon Woodruff, this is my 11th year doing this now with the Brewers, and he's definitely on my short list of all-time great guys to deal with. He hasn't changed an iota from when he was on the carousel back and forth from Colorado Springs several years ago. It's crazy to even be talking about that with the way he's pitching now. But just humble, down to earth, all about the team. It's cool to see. But yeah, I mean, what's working for him is it seems like two things. This is what we've kind of been hammering down on over the last couple of weeks with him and Craig Counsell. Number one is his off-speed stuff is just so much better and so much more consistent than it has been in recent years. And specifically, his curveball has become a real weapon. And when you can have the confidence to throw that in 2 strike counts and know that you're going to get it over, you're going to get a swing, that makes a big difference. And it's just another tool in the tool chest, so to speak. And, he's also been able to kind of avoid those big innings. He used to have like the one blow up inning last year, 2 years ago, that would really, set him back and kind of keep him from getting to that next level. And so far he's been able to avoid that and just kind of mowing him down, and he gets in any kind of trouble, bears down, and all of a sudden he gets a ground ball double play, or, today he had some nice defense behind him there in the 6th inning. So everything is really coming together, and you just look at the numbers, the peripheral numbers, they're incredible. And, who'd have thunk it? After all these years of everybody wailing and gnashing their teeth, the Brewers have a true Cy Young candidate. They've got a basically kind of a 1B candidate in Corbin Burns, who certainly has much more that he can give this season. And then you look at the start that Freddie Peralta had Friday, 7-inning complete game. He's right on the cusp too. So all of a sudden you've got 3 really good, young, homegrown pitchers in manning your rotation. That's a heck of a start, for future years for the Brewers and including this year, of course.
Yeah, Woodruff himself went 7 innings as well on Sunday to, again, wrap up that sweep, 3-0 shutout of the Nationals. And Yeah, we've said a lot about him in the past. I mean, he's kind of understated because he doesn't necessarily, he's not a flashy or fiery guy, but he's just very even keeled. And every time he's been put in a position where they've needed something from him, he's delivered. He delivered last year in the penultimate game of the season, right before the playoffs, in a game they had to have against the Cardinals. You know, he started coming off an injury in that wild card game in Washington in 2019, and gave him four great innings. I mean, he's already been to an all-star game, and I think, you know, it's impossible in a year where health is a big question mark for a lot of players, you know, and you never know with coming off the short year if your pitchers are going to make it through a full year. But I think it's pretty simple for me. If the Brewers are in this position, that's your Cy Young. Otherwise, I think it's going to be just Jacob DeGrom by default, because his numbers are also so ridiculous, and the Mets are a very good team and contending for the NL East. And I do think that, you know, he'll be widely expected to win that award from a national perspective, but Woodruff is definitely starting to turn heads. Speaking of award winners, Christian Yelich, MVP winner, of course, in 2018 and runner-up in 2019. We're starting to see signs of him turn it around. He had a really good game last Sunday, right before our last podcast, but still not seeing really everything clicking with him. He did have a triple in a win in Washington, which was kind of nice, seeing him run around the bases, made a couple diving plays. All signs that tell me that his health is good, that his back is good. But they're still being very cautious with him, which is interesting to me. You know, he's not batting against lefties when lefty pitchers are starting. He usually comes into the game late once they've subbed into right-handed relievers. But they're really being careful and selective with him. And that would make me think maybe the health is still, at least, I don't know, concern's probably too strong. But they're really trying to work their way into this. And Yelich himself seems to be a very slow process. What have you seen from him this week? Does it feel like he's just on the cusp of a breakthrough, or it's just going to be this, you know, maybe slow return over the course of the season for him?
Tom wrote about it during the Washington series. You know, he's taking his walks, seeing a lot of pitches, which is always a good sign for a really good hitter like Christian Yelich. And I think that's a good thing. You know, he's being selective. He's not traditionally guys like that don't get a lot to hit. So the bonus part of that is you're not swinging at bad pitches as much. And, you know, if you can kind of get a base under him, get the confidence going a little bit, because even though this guy's, you know, a couple years removed from nearly winning a second straight MVP, you know, it's not like he's forgotten how to hit. Yeah, he had a rough year last year, you know, the back injury this year, still working on timing and everything like that. But, you know, I think it's slowly coming. You're seeing good signs. And, you know, defensively, like you mentioned, he's running around out there, is making some sliding catches and so forth. So, you know, the Brewers are certainly going to continue to be careful with him. And this is very much like the Ryan Braun plan of old, where, you know, you're just going to spot him days off. And it seems like those are coming, you know, with the left-handed starters, as you mentioned also. But I think as he gets more games under him, starts hitting a little bit better, you know, he sees himself that he's got that base underneath him and his back is holding up okay. It sounds like the maintenance that they're doing, you know, they've kind of focused in on a sweet spot with that. And they've got everything, you know, kind of working in the right direction. I think then you'll start seeing him play, you know, pretty much every day with the occasional, you know, scheduled day off. So all signs pointing in the right direction, and we'll see where he goes from here. But to get him swinging and then, you know, it plugged into an offense that's finally starting to show a little bit of life. You know, Willie Adames has been a great addition. Abisail Garcia has been hitting for power and doing some good things. Omar Narvaez hit a homer today. Colton Wong's been, you know, kind of that spark plug atop the lineup. So if you get those guys moving and going, and all of a sudden maybe this offense is poised for a takeoff and can vault itself from the bottom, the dregs of the major leagues as far as the offensive numbers go, and start getting in a better place, I think, that everybody expected it to be coming out of spring training.
Yeah, even with the 5-2 week, the Brewers still average just about 3.7 runs per game. And you mentioned it, they're bottom five team in almost every major offensive category. They're still right around league average in home runs. But when it comes to OPS, some of the things that show consistency, and it'll take a while for those numbers to turn around, even if they have a good week or two, but they're still among the worst teams in the league, right up there with the teams that, you know, no one is taking seriously. So there is still, I think, a lot of concern on the offensive side. And Keston Hira, he came back this week. Brewers made a lot of roster moves early in the week. One of them was to bring Keston Hira back from AAA, where he absolutely mashed the ball. And it was a very limited amount of time. It was 9 days, 9 games. And I know a lot of people, even in the moment, felt that they should have given him a longer time, you know, let him really find it, not just a quick turnaround. To which my suggestion would be, look, the Brewers need offense. And if they think this guy, you know, if they think Keston Hira has figured something out, bring him back now. Of course, he has since gone 1-for-16 this week with a single and still really, really scuffling. He didn't play on Sunday. What do you speculate is the next step with him? I mean, I'm assuming they'll give him another, you know, they're not going to send him back down this week unless things really bottom out or they need a roster spot or something. But what do you think should be the next move for the Brewers, or what do you think they're going to do here?
Yeah, I will go on record as saying I was very surprised that they brought him back so quickly. And I know he was mashing the ball in Nashville, and the whole team has been mashing the ball. They're on a really incredible streak down there offensively, especially. But to me, it seemed to me like it was going to be more important to get him in a really good spot for an extended period of time. You know, what do I know? I'm just a baseball writer, but, you know, 9 days just doesn't seem like it's that long, you know, and, you know, they're keyed in on specific things. He's telling them, yeah, he's good to go and all that. And you can point to some numbers, but, you know, it seemed like they were at least treading water at first base without him on the roster. And, you know, maybe you can get a guy like Daniel Vogelbach swinging a hotter bat, but it's tough. You know, like I think back to several years ago, a few years ago, remember Travis Shaw? You know, he was kind of in a similar situation where, you know, he had two really good years, comes in, just totally, totally lost it, sent him to the minors, didn't do well, really. They brought him back, still didn't do well in the major leagues, sent him back for a longer stint, started showing signs, came back, couldn't find it. So it was like this yo-yo, this back and forth. And I think that really messes with a guy's mental state. And with a young guy, especially like Keston Hira, I think you have to be very careful with that as well. So it's going to be interesting to see if he continues to struggle like this. I don't think you can continue to roll him out there and, you know, crush his confidence even more than it probably already is. You know, give him, I don't know. I mean, do you give him another week of struggles like this? And then all of a sudden you're trying to figure out what to do. I've seen on Twitter, the hot name of late is Zach Greene, who's been swinging a hot bat at Nashville. You know, they'd have to do some roster maneuvering to get him up. But, you know, is that a guy that you look at potentially to come up and try him and see what he does? And you leave Keston Hira down for a longer period of time? I don't know. There are no easy answers, but you know, you've got so many other guys headed in the right direction. You certainly would like to get Keston Hira pointed in the right direction as well, because when you looked at this offense coming into the season, you know, he was a definite linchpin and a foundation piece and a guy that you had penciled in every day in the middle of that lineup to be a difference maker. And they're just not getting anything from him right now.
I was definitely going to ask about Zach Greene. He's a guy who does not have a ton of major league experience. In fact, just 16 plate appearances with San Francisco back in 2019. He's a 27-year-old guy. He's hitting the ball really well. He's got an OPS well over one. He's got 9 home runs, I think, and he's driving in runs. But I mean, we're not talking about a guy who's a surefire major league player, you know. And the only reason I think he might make some sense here is that it's not just Hira. Vogelbach, like you said, Vogelbach has not swung the ball. He's not really been a credible starting major league first baseman. You know, he did get a little bit of extra run when Hira was out, but his numbers haven't been good. And Travis Shaw at third base has struggled pretty mightily. He kind of got out to a good start, had some clutch hits, and is, you know, I think everybody kind of likes it when they see him, you know, hit a home run or get back to some semblance of the player he was in 2017 and 2018. But the corner infield spots have not been productive overall for the Brewers, no matter who they've had there, you know, whether it's Pablo Reyes or Vogelbach or Hira or whatever. So maybe Zach Greene makes sense. I mean, the guy can, I guess, play third base.
He's a right-handed hitter, which is big too, you know, as far as first base goes, you know. So maybe you can try a platoon with him and Vogelbach for the time being. I don't know. But just looking at his numbers here in Nashville this season, .278 average, 9 homers already in 21 games, 25 RBI, 1.037 OPS. You know, those are the kinds of numbers you like to see. So maybe he's in the conversation. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. You know, this is why those guys get paid the big bucks, to make the hard decisions. And it's just a matter of how much longer you go. If Keston Hira keeps struggling, maybe makes it easy on him and he goes on a tear this week. Who knows? But you know, it's a trick box, as Tom Haudricourt would like to say.
Yeah, and there just aren't many options. You know, they just don't have guys at the top of their minor league food chain who are ready to contribute at the major league level. This is the punishment of having a minor league system that has struggled for the last couple of years in terms of at least national rankings or producing top flight guys. They had their period of time where they churned out a ton of major league talent, guys that are on this team now, including guys on this pitching staff that we've talked about, and they just didn't have another wave of guys coming in. And right now you're sort of seeing that, especially on offense. I think one of the more interesting, I don't know if it's a condemnation, but seeing Keston Hira bunt in extra innings, leading off an inning. You know, we know how much Craig Counsell doesn't like to do that,
Yeah,
especially for.
poor is the bunt.
Yes, he hates it, especially for a guy who was a sort of a gritty player in his career, who had a lot of like sac flies and I'm sure a lot of sac bunts in his career. But he is not a guy who's into it, and I'm sure it's no secret to those who follow me on Twitter that I definitely fall on the Craig Counsell side of that argument. But having Hira bunt to lead off extras actually kind of makes a lot of sense. The guy just hasn't been hitting the ball, sacrifices the runner who starts at second base to third. Now Jackie Bradley Jr. hits a ball to the wall. It ends up not really mattering, but. You know, it seems like you got to kind of go outside the box when guys aren't hitting across the board for the Brewers, but especially Hira. And, you know, it got me thinking, I mean, maybe the Brewers are going to, I don't think they're going to turn a new leaf or anything like that, but, you know, when the offense is struggling like it is, maybe you do have to start thinking about some non-traditional things like bunting, like, yeah, and we'll talk a little more about Josh Hader, but maybe having him come for the 10th instead of the 9th, because the 10th is the more complicated inning. I know that's maybe a whole separate can of worms, and we could talk about that in a second, but you know, maybe they do start stealing more bases like we saw from the Padres, where they put the pressure on the pitching staff throughout that series. They just run, and you got to steal runs somehow. And when this offense just isn't driving the ball and isn't hitting with runners in scoring position, it seems like I don't know, maybe the time is now to start experimenting and doing weird things.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in theory that's a good idea. I don't see it happening, as I think we've all seen Craig Counsell's very stubborn when it comes to his managerial strategy. And I don't think you're going to all of a sudden start seeing the Brewers dropping down more bunts. I don't think you're going to see them stealing more bases. You know, maybe here and there, but I think it's more that bunt that Hira laid down. It was interesting hearing Craig Counsell talk about it, and that they knew that he had that in his skill set coming out of college. And, you know, we just
What a
haven't
great
seen
bunt. It
it.
was a great bunt.
Yeah, it was terrific. And we were, Adam McKelvey and I were arguing about it actually before it happened. He was calling for it, and I just looked at him like he was crazy. And of course, he drops it down, and it was a beauty. And it goes back to, like, even the Ron Renicke days. And Ron Renicke, as we all remember, loved the bunt. You know, he had no problem sacrificing guys up. But it's a matter of, you know, do you ask a guy who never bunts or has bunted so seldom in his career that you don't know if he can do it to bunt in a certain situation? It's not fair. And people think it's so easy to drop down a bunt. It's not, and get it fair and get it to the point where, you know, you're going to be able to advance the runner. So you have to be selective in who's doing it, and you have to have confidence in that guy that he's going to be able to deliver. And for all the swing and miss Keston Hira has had in his game, it was pretty cool to see him contribute to a win in that fashion, doing something, you know, getting back to basics, so to speak, and being able to move the runner up. So it was fun to talk about that after the game. It was fun to write about. And but I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath and expect much more of that in the days and weeks and months to come.
No, I would not either. I do not believe in the bunt in almost any situation. I did think that was a good one though. I thought the way here it swung the bat kind of made sense, and yeah, it did ultimately didn't maybe directly contribute to that win, but was part of that 10th inning. And let me go back to Hader and referring to that 10th inning, back-to-back games that went to the 10th, both with different outcomes, and both times Craig Counsell did the same thing. He had Josh Hader pitch the 9th, and Brent Suter come in and pitch the 10th. Brent Suter got hit around kind of both times, but in the second outing, they were right at people, a couple rifles to third base, and it didn't end up costing, and the Brewers, of course, came back to win. I'm interested, and again, this is in the vein of the offense has struggled so much that's sort of coloring my question here. I know Craig Counsell has really sort of dialed down Hader's role to be a ninth inning role, a very traditional closer type role. Sometimes it's a tied game, but the ninth inning is when he goes to Josh Hader. And I just wonder if you think there'd be any wiggle room on that, given that with the way this system is now, where the runner starts on second base in the 10th, you know, that's the more challenging inning, and you need a guy who's going to strike people out like Josh Hader can't. Josh Hader's been amazing. We don't even talk about him, but he's been, you know, off the charts good again. And obviously you can't get to the 10th unless you get a clean ninth, which I think everyone understands. But if you trust Brent Suter in the 10th, you know, in an easier inning, theoretically, where there is no runner starting at second base, you know, it seems like maybe you let him work the ninth, and, you know, heck, if Josh Hader doesn't get to pitch, oh, well, that's a day off for Josh Hader. And that might benefit you down the road. I know they're mindful of his usage, but it's interesting that with this runner on second base, this is the time that the Brewers have elected to really make his role more restrictive, more very much about the ninth inning, when it seems like he'd be such a weapon, if they only want to use him for one inning, in extras. What do you think about that? Am I just overlooking the forest for the trees here? Or like, how would you look at that?
I mean, I get it. I get the argument, but again, Craig Counsell is proven to be very inflexible in certain ways and certain beliefs. And they must have numbers that tell them that the likelihood is better for a win if you're pitching Josh Hader in the ninth as opposed to the 10th inning. They don't do anything without consulting the numbers and knowing what the percentages are. That's a guarantee. So, you know, you make perfect sense as far as needing the strikeouts in the 10th inning. You got that guy on second base. But, you know, he is committed to Josh Hader as his ninth inning guy, for better or worse. And who can argue with the results to this point? You know, he's perfect in save opportunities this season. I believe he's 3-0. You know, he's unleashed that changeup, which has been a terrific weapon for him so far this season. He's spotting it just enough to, you know, now all of a sudden guys have two off-speed pitches to worry about in addition to the fastball. So if it ain't broke, I guess don't try to fix it. And I think that's the case here with Josh Hader.
All right, fair enough. There are a few things I just assume are certain, and one is like certain guys coming up to the plate who are struggling so bad offensively that it surprises me when they do actually have a hit. It surprises me when anybody even like makes hard contact against Josh Hader these days. You know, there was a while there where home runs were a problem. Like, I don't see, no one's hitting him at all. He's just crushing people. And again, fortunately, I guess as Brewers fans can kind of take him for granted because he just comes in, he's automatic. You get three pretty quick outs when he comes into the game. A lot of roster moves, like I mentioned this week, the Brewers traded Billy McKinney to the Mets. The Mets in a lot of trouble with injuries, needing outfielders pretty badly, and they were able to swing a deal for a 17-year-old prospect, a lottery ticket, as you guys wrote about at jsonline.com. But McKinney was not a huge offensive force. He made a great defensive play, kind of a nice guy off the bench, but because of the injuries the Brewers had, you know, you saw that he probably wasn't an everyday player, so not somebody that I think the Brewers will ultimately lose, but a hit to their depth. They've had some hits to their depth lately. And then they designate Josh Lindblom for assignment, guy who was on a 3-year deal in the second year of a 3-year deal. Really surprised me. He's struggled this year, but I was shocked that the Brewers cut bait on that. I thought that they would, you know, at least hang on to him through this year and see if he could still be a contributor to the rotation. I don't know if it's because Eric Lauer has looked pretty good, had a really good start this week and a home run of all things against the Padres. So I don't know if that informed their decision making, but the Lindblom thing really, really caught me off guard. And I know Tom wrote about it at JS Online and you know, but man, that thing that just really surprised me. Did that surprise you?
Honestly, no. You know, when we had been talking about it amongst ourselves for a while, you know, you're trying to win games, and that was a financial outlay that to this point obviously has not worked. And at some point you need that roster spot. Craig Counsell said that after in the wake of the move. You know, you can only go so far carrying a guy that you really can't pitch. And that's what it was coming down to with Lindblom. You know, you weren't able to pitch him in anything but blowout situations. And, you know, you're essentially pitching a man down at that point, and every arm counts in the bullpen. So I would say credit to David Stearns and company for recognizing that and making the move. I think it's also important to note that, you know, they not surprisingly, he cleared waivers, and the two parties were able to come together and agree that he would go down to Nashville and try to get things straight there. Make no mistake, Josh Lindblom is one of the hardest working, most cerebral, nicest guys around, and you never want to see a guy like that struggle. You know, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to do everything in his power to right the ship when he gets down there, and that's a great environment to do it in. Get down there, you know, you're going to see a lot of guys who've been in the major leagues, a lot of guys who want to get back to the major leagues, and just get him on a regular schedule, let him pitch, see if they can figure out what's going on with him. And, you know, maybe by the All-Star break, maybe, you know, somewhere in the second half, they've seen enough of a body of work that he's figured out his issues. He comes back and he can provide them some more valuable innings in the bullpen in the second half. It's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. You know, I'm sure it was a kind of a blow for Josh Lindblom to have to do this, but as we all know, and as he well knows, being in the game so long, it's a business, and you have to perform. And if you don't, you know, you got to figure out ways to get back to performing, however that is. So it'll be interesting to check back on him from time to time and see what he's doing. And if he's able to put it together, then all of a sudden the Brewers have another nice option that they can, you know, maybe call up in the second half.
You've heard me talk about Milwaukee Sports and Social before, the brand new rec league that is gaining a huge following in Milwaukee. Well, if you've been thinking about registering for a fun co-ed kickball or softball league this summer, now is the time to act. Early bird registration ends this Saturday, June 5th. That's the last day for you to sign up for only $99.99. You can register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. If you sign up this week, you can play softball or kickball for the cheapest possible price because our listeners get to take an extra $5 off their registration with code BASEBALL at checkout. Make sure you take advantage of this deal this week. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. I have a hard time articulating how Willy Adames seems to just stabilize things. I mean, it's not that he's hitting the ball fine in his brief time with the Brewers. He's got hits in 7 of his 10 games. He had a phenomenal game against the Padres, that walk-off win. He was 4-for-5, hit a majestic 3-run homer that gave him a 2-run lead, which was a short-lived lead, but he also threw out Eric Hosmer at the plate, a go-ahead run that would have absolutely tilted the scales the other way in a game that the Brewers ultimately won. He seems like he fits the vibe. It seems like a high-energy leader type guy, and even though he's made a few miscues at shortstop, it just feels more settled. It feels like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just not having to go with Urias at shortstop, but there seems to be something that he brings to the table that I can't even quite articulate. And Urias seems to have taken to his role of kind of super utility man very well. He had a solid week in his first week outside the starting shortstop role. Give me a sense of what Willy Adames is like. I know you've been on a couple of Zoom calls and he's met with the media a couple times. Give me a sense of how you've seen him this week.
Oh man, he's a reporter's dream, that's for sure. You know, the smiling, happy-go-lucky, energetic guy that we see on the field is the way he is with the media as well, and we love it. You know, just very. I don't want to say approachable because we haven't been able to approach him yet, but happy to do interviews and thoughtful, gives good answers, got some personality. So from a selfish standpoint, he's been a terrific addition. On the field, I guess the word I would use is winner. You know, like he's just a guy that will do whatever it takes. He's got leadership qualities. You know, I asked Craig Counsell about that after the Padres game. You know, how rare is it for a guy who, you know, he's been on a new team for 6 games, and it seems like he's almost running the dugout, you know? I mean, guys kind of flock to him. He starts to, you know, the dugout gauntlet again after the home run. You know, it's been fun to watch, and it's been interesting to watch too. You know, he is physically, you look at the guy, to me, that's a shortstop, you know, and this is not a cut on Luis Urias, but Luis Urias basically had always been pegged as a future second baseman, more of a second baseman's build, I think, more of a second baseman's arm. Willy Adames has got that longer frame, cannon for an arm, great range, and then he's got the offense to go with it. Now, is there some strikeout? Yes. Is he going to hit 300? No. but you take all the pieces and you put them together, and that's to me, I mean, an everyday major league shortstop. Now, the Brewers did not trade Zach Davies and Trent Grisham to acquire a utility guy like I think everybody's kind of hoping Luis Urias becomes. But maybe Eric Lauer is the wild card in that. Maybe he's found something, and all of a sudden that trade evens out a little bit more. Because I know everybody's fixated on losing Trent Grisham, who became a Gold Glover, leadoff hitter, a guy with some power. But the jury's still out, I would say, on the trade overall. It's certainly tilted in the Padres' favor at this point, but seeing good signs from Eric Lauer right now, and for all the people that were worried about losing JP Feiereisen and Drew Rasmussen, I think those fears have already been allayed 1 week in. Willy Adames is going to be the guy moving forward up the middle.
Great week for the starting pitchers. Eric Lauer, Adrian Hauser had a good start. Actually, Corbin Burns, of all people, had probably the weakest start with Brandon Woodruff getting two of them and Freddy Peralta doing what he does in a 7-inning complete game win performance against Washington in the first half of that doubleheader. So really good showing from the starters, as seems to be the case. Before I let you go, anything else? Anybody else you wanted to point out, or anything else that struck you this week for the Brewers?
I will go back to this is maybe going back a little bit too far, but I was in Cincinnati for that series last weekend, and maybe you and Tom talked about it, I'm not sure, but seeing Daniel Robertson hit that home run down in Cincinnati was really something, of all guys to do that in that situation, and you could tell it really meant something to him after the game, which is always cool to see. He's been hobbled a little bit by a left calf injury. He's not on the IL yet, which is a good idea, or good sign for him. But just a guy that I think really appreciates every day he accrues in the major league. So we'll see where he's at. But that was just one of those fun little moments, fun story to write after he did that. So just kind of going through here. Jacob Nottingham claimed by the Seattle Mariners again. So it's been back and forth, and I saw he's been actually starting at first base for him, which is interesting too. So
Wild.
good luck to the young man. He was always a nice fellow to deal with. Unfortunately, never really caught on here, and no pun intended. But another trade I know that Brewers fans will never let David Stearns forget, giving up Chris Davis for him years back. That's kind of a tough one to swallow. But and then I think the other thing that kind of jumps out is Avi Garcia, flashing that power up to 10 homers, 30 RBI. He's right now on pace, I think, to set career highs in both categories. And he's hitting 248, which you'll take. So, that four-man outfield that everybody was all worried about coming into the season, that's worked out just fine. Jackie Bradley Jr. obviously has, in his own words, been abysmal. And he doesn't seem like he's getting much closer to getting back on track. But the guy, he's delivered some big hits. He'll pop the occasional homer, and you always get good defense from him. So, good signs out there in the outfield as well.
First walk-off of Jackie Bradley Jr.'s career, had the most at-bats of anybody in Major League Baseball without a walk-off home run or walk-off hit of any kind. So, good for him. Yeah, his offense has been bad. We talked a little bit about Jackie Bradley Jr. last week. I mean, offense has just really been bad, but the defense is still there. So at least he's not a guy that they're just going to part with. He definitely brings some stuff to the table, and a guy who's a veteran that you'd like to think will round into form. We did not talk about that Robertson home run. Manny Pena on Monday, like that's when its offense is struggling like it is. It needs those random homers from those unexpected sources to sort of steal games here and there, and that seems to be the case. It's
Yeah.
how they're winning.
Shout out to Manny Pena too. I mean, the guy, he's really amazing, at his age especially. Omar Narvaez is playing most days, which you understand. He's having a really good year. But Manny Pena, when he comes in, there is no drop off. The guy calls a tremendous game. Defensively, he's always really good, but showing that pop and doing a little bit offensively is always a bonus as well. So the Brewers are very well situated at catcher this season, which is definitely a good place for them to be. And then they've got Luke Maile at Nashville, so they need a third guy. And looking, a couple years down the line, Mario Feliciano in the minors as well, trying to put the finishing touches on a guy that, you know, I think everybody's expecting to be, you know, the next franchise catcher, so to speak, a guy who not only is going to be good defensively, but could be an impact bat, which would be very fun to watch.
Brewers will host the Detroit Tigers Monday and Tuesday. That is not a good team, but they did just sweep the New York Yankees over the weekend. So a team coming in hot. And then after an off day Wednesday, it's a four-game series at American Family Field against the Arizona Diamondbacks. The stadium's still at 50% capacity, working its way up by the end of June. It'll be 100% capacity. It'll start to feel like completely normal baseball, getting inching closer and closer to that. So that's what the Brewers are looking at this week. Todd, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
JR, always a pleasure.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Find us on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. He's at Todd_Rosiak. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right. Give him a holler. Let him know what you think of the podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.